Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench. Everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake.
It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 central on CBS.
Here comes another episode of Bo Thompson's WBT Podcast. Podcast. The best moments of the week, ending Friday, November 22nd, 2019.
Of course, I host WBT's Morning News every weekday morning from 5 until 8, and then two more hours with the governor, Pat McCrory, on the Pat McCrory Show. So I've been with the governor, 2 years? And yesterday I did something I've never done before. And this was because something was happening later that morning in Concord. So let's roll the clocks back just a little bit here. But I got to call an audible for a second here. I want to go to the WBT hotline and welcome to the Pat McCrory Show. Because the children demanded it. I believe we do have the most famous former mayor to ever be on the Pat McCrory Show, do we not?
Wait a minute.
Yes, good morning, Bo. This is your show. You don't still have the governor on.
I'll tell you, this is a setup.
Bo Thompson show. I wouldn't have called in.
This is a left-wing conspiracy. This is George Soros money going after me. I can't believe that we have this. What was his name again? That
Scott. He's not only a former mayor now. His name is going to be attached to the former Concord Regional Airport in just a few hours, officially.
You are kidding me.
As today.
Are they going to put a sign like on the highway in the air and blimp of Scott Padgett Airport?
Yeah. Probably. No, it's getting confusing over here. You know, I got the two streets named after me. And that confuses a lot of people. Now we got the airport. It is going to get confusing. I mean, think of the people in the air, how confusing it's going to be.
I mean, you're going to see from the air Scott Padgett Elementary School, Scott Padgett Airport, Scott Padgett Lane. You haven't been mayor for 30 years, and they're still naming things after you.
No, you got your memory confused with mine.
If you're just joining us, this is, and I didn't tell the governor here we were going to do this.
Oh, gosh.
But I wanted to surprise him.
Surprised me on your last show.
On my last show. Well, according to the Scott Padgett here, you've already been gone from the show.
Yeah, that sounds like Scott Padgett.
I remember the governor when he was a moderate. He was a good man.
Oh, gosh.
Scott Padgett is going to have his name permanently affixed to the Concord Regional Airport.
Who's
going to
come help you cut the ribbon? Elizabeth Warren?
See, here he goes.
It will become the Concord Padgett Regional Airport.
You are kidding me.
I am
Read
not.
That again?
The Concord Padgett Regional Airport.
So is the city going to be changing that name now? Instead of Concord, North Carolina, it'll be Concord Padgett, North Carolina? Is that next Padgett?
I don't want to be vain. We're not going that far.
This is
I would have really liked to have been invited to that ceremony Saturday. Just read about it in the paper this morning. Philip Van Everly gets a bronze statue, and according to what I read, he is a former mayor of Charlotte too. Is that right?
Van Everly is a former mayor of Charlotte, and what did he get now?
Oh, he got a bronze statue there in the city where you used to be the mayor, Governor. and the trail of history.
Van Everly got in the trail of history. Are you trying to make a point that I didn't get in the trail of history?
I think the point speaks for itself. I would never make that point.
You would never make that point.
No.
You're just rubbing salt in the wound. You know, my scab was just starting to kind of go over the bad cut. And now you have to bring up Phil Van Everly. Don't they have other things named after Van Everly already?
Well, I don't know. He paid a few bucks in that Lance Cracker thing. But, you know, it just goes back to the conversation we had on there several months ago. I start writing down these names again. Stan Brookshire, Ben Douglas, John Belk, Jim Martin. And there just seems to be something missing.
Let's see. Douglas, the airport was named after him, right? Martin, right. There's a highway named after him. Who else? John Belk, they're, like everything is named after him.
Yep.
Who else did you mention?
Stan Brookshire.
Stan Brookshire.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Brookshire Freeway.
Mm-hmm.
And Phil Van Every has a bronze statue.
A bronze statue.
And you have an airport and an elementary school and a road?
Yeah. Two roads.
And I might point out that by having his name attached to the airport now, there's a new logo for the airport
No.
that actually has his name in it. Isn't that right?
It's right. You're right. It's a beautiful logo, and I'm very proud of that. I had nothing to do with that. And of course, nothing to do with the naming. But
well, congratulations. Today marks the 25th year of the Concord Regional Airport, and in just a few hours,
I used to fly out of there all the time. In fact, when I was governor, I'd fly out of the airport instead of taking the Charlotte airport. I went through Concord.
Will you ever fly into
No,
it again?
Never again.
Well, you know, maybe that's the reason.
Don't say it.
Because you ignored their airport.
Maybe that's it.
Maybe. I'm really started trying to think about this, Governor. Because you know I like you.
Oh, yeah, I can tell.
I'm thinking about these other people. It emphasizes that Philip Van Every was a native of Charlotte. And mm-hmm. I know you're not a native of Charlotte. Maybe that's one of the things that's holding you up.
You think I'm being discriminated against? You think maybe I'm a victim. Can I play the victim card like all you liberal Democrats do? Can I play the victim card?
You wore that label so many times. But you know, maybe, and I can't think what Charlotte's waiting on, but maybe they're waiting on you to get a little older. Or
maybe they're waiting for me to die.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I was going to say pass away, but maybe that's what they're waiting on. I just can't figure it. But I'm on your team. If I can help you,
Scott,
I'd like to start a petition to get something named there.
I feel the love. I feel the empathy.
This is the first guest.
I feel the brotherhood from you.
This is the first guest I've ever surprised you and not told you. Did he just hang up on us?
He's good.
No, I'm not.
Oh, shucks. That was me trying to get Charles to hang up.
Scott Padgett, congratulations.
Scott Padgett, congratulations on having the fifth or sixth thing named after you. And, you know, my studio in Lake James, we also named that the Scott Padgett Studio in Nebo, North Carolina. They put a plaque. They put a plaque with your name in my house. It's just getting ridiculous. Were you really that great of human being and mayor?
It's what the people say. It's what they say.
Not just the people, it's the children, right?
It's the children.
It is, yes.
Oh.
The kids demanded it. Hey, we appreciate you coming on short notice. Scott Padgett.
Scott Padgett, this is quite a surprise. Congratulations, Mayor. Proud
all
of
right.
you.
Thanks, Governor. Have a good day.
Get all your beau on the go. His best of the week on WBT. This is Beau Thompson's WBT podcast.
Panthers, Falcons, yesterday.
11 seconds to go. Atlanta, as we mentioned, three straight home games after this. Tampa Bay, the Saints, and then the Panthers. Carolina will go to New Orleans, then come back here and host Washington before going to Atlanta. Atlanta will improve to 3-7. The Panthers will drop to 5-5. Matt Ryan takes a knee. That's it. With a disappointing final score, Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte, Atlanta 29 and Carolina 3.
Still hard to believe listening back to it now, and I know for our next guest, it's probably hard to believe too. I heard him in final thoughts yesterday talking about who are these Carolina Panthers, and it's difficult to pinpoint that. Because some weeks, really good, some weeks, yesterday. And Mick Mixon joins us, the play-by-play voice. Mick, how you feeling 24 hours later?
a little salty, I guess, like everybody who watched that game or listened to it yesterday. You know, as Oak said in his final thoughts, and I agree, he said it very well, I mean, you know, your world kind of shrinks down now. If you win that game, now you can sort of polish up the bandwagon and get it out and see if anybody wants to hop on and, you know, kind of back on serve after Green Bay. But losing that game at home yesterday in that way, now the bandwagon's got to stay in the garage. Now you just got to – your singular focus just has to be New Orleans and try to figure out a way to play well in the Superdome. 5-5 with a lot of teams ahead of you in the NFC, and then some serious questions about – beyond Christian McCaffrey, who, you know, what's the identity of this offense, and then probably defense and on special teams as well.
And you know, I guess the big picture, Mick, is they're every bit a 5-5, .500 team, which means, you know, wildly big swings of up and down of San Francisco and Atlanta happens, but yet some really good wins when Kyle Allen took over as quarterback for an 0-2 team. They went on a 4-game winning streak. So in the end, once you add it up, though, but this roller coaster is very 500, and that won't be even close enough in the NFC to get the job done, where 10 wins has to be a minimum, if not 11, to make the playoffs. So again, with 6 weeks to go, the goal is always to make the postseason. Again, you only look at New Orleans this week and not worry about that at the moment, but that seems like a distant dream right now until they get this thing turned around.
Yeah, and I think that's what would be disappointing to this coaching staff too, and fans as well, as Oak, is that it'd be one thing if this were just 500, just really not that good. I mean, it's probably you've had a bunch of injuries or whatever, but I think that the coaches still feel and the team feels like this is a good football team in here somewhere, just with the difficulty of putting it all together and sustaining it. You know, the Panthers had more plays yesterday, about equal in total yards. There were opportunities, but to have four interceptions, to have 2 of 14 on third down, 8 penalties for almost 70 yards. The Falcons had 3 penalties. You give up a punt return kind of scot-free where Barner takes it in, somersaults into the end zone. It seemed difficult for the Panthers to match the enthusiasm and the zeal that Atlanta brought to the game yesterday. They had it in New Orleans somehow or another, and they carried it through to Charlotte yesterday.
Well, and I guess you have to try to adopt whatever secret sauce they found going into New Orleans this week for the Panthers, because they've got to go in and do the same thing. And most of the time, that's a daunting thing to get. I mean, it's always a daunting thing to go into that atmosphere, but Atlanta was in a lot worse shape than we were, and they went and did what they did. So you got to latch on to that in some way, right?
I know. I got one buddy of mine that I like talking football with, and for almost 10 years now, he's been telling me that Drew Brees has a dead arm, that he's just got this popcorn arm, that he's shot, he's used up, he can't make the throws. So I keep waiting for this to kick in. But it hasn't yet.
Maybe this will be the week.
And he doesn't throw deep, but he's accurate, that's for sure. Bright note, everyone's been complaining about the run defense. That happened. And also, at no point did anyone rip a helmet off a quarterback and hit him over the head with it. So there were some bright notes yesterday.
I still can't believe that. I read Peter King's Football Morning in America this morning. He transcribed the Joe Buck, Troy Aikman commentary and put it out there. What, you know, the horrific things that they were saying about the gut wrenching pathos that they saw. So yeah, we could have worse problems here this morning in Charlotte.
Well, and I can't remember who tweeted this. I wish I could remember, because it was, I'd like to attribute it to him, but somebody said, "Now I understand why the Browns have a helmet as their logo."
They use it for multi-purposes.
Yes. Now it makes more sense. But you were talking about the run defense. Well, in a season of inconsistency, Mick, the one thing that was consistent again yesterday, even though he didn't have a touchdown, nobody did for the Panthers, Christian McCaffrey continues. I mean, over 100 yards, and what he's doing still continues to amaze, despite you may not like the score at the end yesterday.
This is just in him. I mean, he's obviously well-parented, but I think this would be Christian McCaffrey. If he were a roofer, if he installed cable TV, if he were a chef, if he sold insurance, no matter what, he has to bring it every time. He would have to give maximum effort. And it's definitely humbling to watch him play and the combative spirit that he brings to every game. So I think it'll be up to the Panthers to figure out. And we thought we dialed into something with DJ Moore, and it could still be. I mean, the best could still be yet to be. But to find some other consistent weapons to make defenses pay for shadowing McCaffrey with extra defenders.
Yeah, DJ, 8 catches, 95 yards, almost had 100 yards for a third consecutive game. So some good things there. I don't think it's all bad. I think, you know, you kind of have to ride with what you got, right, with Kyle Allen at this point and see what you got in that as far as moving forward and hopefully get the number of wins you need along the way while you figure out what you got at quarterback.
Yeah, well said, the Zoke. I think that's our world right now.
Yeah, and like you both said, pretty much got a win out, looks like, to get into the playoffs. We'll see. You never know. Any given Sunday, as I was explaining to my son the other day, the origins of that phrase, and hopefully this coming weekend we'll say, on any given Sunday, a team like Carolina can go into New Orleans and...
Is that an Al Pacino movie?
Yeah.
Wes Durham paid you a compliment, Bo, the voice of the Falcons. He said he listens to your show and thinks you got a chance.
Thanks.
We'll see you down in Atlanta.
Good to hear
in
you in the mornings, man. It's fun.
Appreciate you tuning
local.
In.
Yeah. You and Bo knocking it out.
We could always use more listeners. We appreciate that. All right.
Well, I hope he listens at 7:50 every Monday morning, because then he would hear Mick Mixon.
He's on at 7. So.
Ah, well. We'll see.
We have to move Mick to 6:50.
That's why you have radio.com Rewind, folks. You can pause live radio. It's a new feature at radio.com. See, Mick, you led me into a promo there. Thank you, sir.
It's my pleasure. I'm here to serve.
Yes, sir. Tonight at 6, it's Panther Talk on WBT with Eugene, Mick, and Jim. We'll hear from you then, Mick. Thank you.
All right, then.
Every Friday, the best of Bo in one convenient show. We call it Bo Thompson's WBT Podcast.
And good morning. It's Wednesday. It's hump day, November 20th. Bo Thompson here. Time to bring on our cybersecurity expert, Teresa Payton, with Fortalice Solutions locally. And, boy, she travels all across the country and the world, as you know if you listen to this segment each week. But, Teresa, it's become a thing where you are out in various places and people see you and they listen to the segment and they try to guess where you're going to be week to week.
Yes. Yes, and I learned about that on the soccer sidelines of the championship games. But yes, this week, the Big Apple, New York City, I'm here today. And then tonight we'll be hopping a plane to go to the West Coast. Just a really great week out and meeting with people actually internationally to talk about some of these major cybercrime issues that all businesses and consumers are facing.
So you're in the Big Apple, and while you're in the Big Apple, let's talk about one of the anchor stores of all time in the Big Apple, Macy's, which of course is all across the United States, also in Charlotte. But right on the doorstep of Black Friday next week and the holiday shopping season really kicking into high gear, Macy's has a hacking that we need to alert people about. And this is on a broader scale, having to do with Macy's checkout and My Wallet functions, and checkout bags or checkout carts on any website that you visit. It's worth pointing out that even if you don't buy something these days, even if you take it almost to the finish line but not all the way there, hitting that confirm purchase button, you are giving up some of your personal information, and it may be used in ways you don't realize.
Yeah, and this is really unfortunate. As a matter of fact, I went running by Macy's, and I was thinking about them and thinking about this data breach that's happened. And this is part of, for people who have been following, kind of global online websites that take payment card data, bank card data. This is part of something called the Mage Cart breach. And what ended up happening, according to Macy's, was that unauthorized computer code was added to two different pages on Macy's.com. Now, for those of you listening who say, well, I don't shop at Macy's.com, I need you to listen. Just bear with Bo and I here, because this is really important. This MageCart data breach is hitting all different types of sites, and it's not just online retailers. And Bo, you said something really important here. You don't just have to make a purchase to potentially have your data swept up in this breach. Just putting in your information to do comparison shopping, to, you know, kind of scope out what you might be buying for people for birthdays and holidays and other special occasions, could put you at risk of your information being compromised. So one of the things you absolutely want to do is you want to make it a point to change your passwords. The other thing is, think about when you are surfing online and potentially going to make a purchase online, have an email account you're using just for those purchases and not the other parts of your life. So that way, if a place you normally frequent falls prey to this MageCart breach that's hitting these global websites, you don't have to be as worried if they're going to get into the rest of your life. The other thing is, you know, I, years ago, froze all of my credit with the credit bureaus, and I sleep better at night knowing it's permanently frozen. That may not be the right solution for everybody listening, but think about if you are a frequent shopper on Macy's.com, you may want to consider requesting a temporary freeze until we know more about this particular breach.
Okay, so Disney Plus, it was launched a week ago yesterday. I know that you immediately signed up, so did I. We're already big fans of The Mandalorian, both of us. We've been, trading reactions back and forth. But Disney Plus did not go off without a hitch. We almost heard that immediately after the launch last week. And a week later now, we're starting to learn about people who have had their data compromised thanks to the Disney Plus startup, correct?
Yes and no. So what's really interesting about this, and I'm so glad we're covering this, Bo, is what it appears to be is that Disney Plus credentials are being traded and sold on the dark web. What's interesting is Disney has checked. They have not found evidence of a data breach. So what's possible here is those email accounts and passwords were potentially part of one of the other large data breaches that have been reported over the last year. And they just assume, well, Disney Plus is a hot new ticket item. I happen to have this treasure trove of stolen email accounts and passwords from these other shopping sites, from other data breaches that have occurred. I'm going to just try it and see if it works. And it did, because why? Passwords stink. I mean, they're so hard. They're hard to remember. People do recycle them. I don't blame. This is a judge-free zone here. And so because people have recycled them, they're using it to actually get into Disney Plus. Then they were buying, basically trading and selling those on the dark web. So, yes, it is your Disney Plus credential, but it's because they use something that, you know, basically they're recycling it and just getting a best guess. So Disney stands by and says no security breach as far as they've seen. They believe this is a matter of, you know, people using emails and passwords. So if you're listening to this, first thing I'd like everybody to do, please change your password out of an abundance of caution, and then also be taking a look at the email account you're using there and deciding whether or not you just want to stay the course and use that account and just change your passwords pretty regularly, or do you want to consider getting a new account and tying it to Disney Plus? Now, some people may say, I don't really care if somebody else is enjoying Disney Plus on my dime. I don't do other things there. The thing is these people taking over the accounts, they were changing your password on you and locking you out of the account you paid for.
Well, and let me just make sure I'm hearing you right. And there may be people who listen to you and me week to week and say, you guys sound like a broken record with this password thing, and you've been talking about this for years. But essentially, you're saying that Disney, there's no breach or hack within the Disney launch last week, but people have gone out and found your passwords from other places and then come back around to use that against you signing up for Disney because you happen to use the same passwords there and in other places.
That's exactly right, Bo. That is exactly what's happening. So these other data breaches that have happened, and there's been so many, like, I hate to give names, but it's like, you know, there's been data dumps of, I've got Amazon credentials, I've got Zillow credentials, I've got Zoom, I've got Experian, I've got Equifax. Like, all of this different data is sitting on the dark web. And so some enterprising cyber criminals started taking emails, email addresses, and passwords and recycling them and just trying them on Disney Plus, saying, this is the hot new place. Everybody's going to be here. Everybody's signing up. I'm just going to try. And when they hit the jackpot, they turned around and said, this is a legitimate Disney Plus credential. Who wants to buy it from me? And they were selling them from between $3 and $11, which is like, it's not that expensive. Just get your own account, okay? Like, leave my account alone. But that's exactly what was happening, Bo. Disney says, we don't see a data breach. So this is a case of people overtaking your identity by using what they believe you're probably going to recycle and use, your email account and a password that they've seen as part of a different data breach.
Okay, so this is all good refresher stuff because it's going to come into play again. Passwords always come into play when we head into Cyber Monday and Black Friday shopping, and you are going to be here. It's become tradition now. Next week, the day before Thanksgiving on the 27th, you will be in studio with us for at least an hour and a half, taking calls and giving out information, tips as people head into the holiday shopping season. So looking forward to that, and I know we'll continue the conversation in more detail next week.
Absolutely. I cannot wait. It's one of my favorite things to do. And I know that Charles just loves talking to people about the different questions they have. So we're going to be doing, you know, call into the show with your questions. And I'll definitely bring a signed copy of my book to give away to one of the callers. So I'm really looking forward to it. It's one of my favorite times of the year is to come in studio with you, Bo, and the wonderful crew over there at WBT, and actually get a chance to interact with the listeners. It's really, really fun.
Well, right back at you. We'll see you in less than a week now. And until then, have safe travels.
Okay. Thanks, Bo. Be safe out there.
You're listening to Bo Thompson's WBT podcast.
Just for you planners out there, I don't mean to alarm you, but I know you know a week from today is Thanksgiving.
Oh, my God. Already?
Yes.
Okay.
Week from today is
turkey yet.
Thanksgiving. You better get on that. You may not want to after this next story that I have, but 34 days until Christmas.
Yay!
And 40 days until New Year's Eve.
Wow.
So 7, 34, 40. There you go. Don't say I didn't warn you. But all right, this next story, if you're eating breakfast, I'm going to warn you, you may want to turn the radio down for a minute. Because Pam was talking about getting that turkey. You may not want a turkey after this, but seriously, though. You hear these stories a lot. How much bacteria is on certain things that you use every day? And WBTV did a story about this. It's like 5-10 years ago. And, you know, things like the handle in the bathroom, the handle on the door, mm-hmm. the steering wheel in your car, that kind of thing. Well, all right, so it's 2019. Everybody carries a what?
Phone.
A phone. How dirty is that phone?
Oh, gosh.
Are you ready for some of this? Now, this is a survey done by a company, a white light company. You know, so they're the ones that can go in and see the germs on the on the hotel beds and places like that, a company called Vital Vio, or VO. And they say a new survey of 1,200 Americans and their cleaning habits finds that 1 in 4 have never cleaned their phone. 23% have never cleaned their phone. Has everybody in this room cleaned their phone before?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah?
Frequently. Frequently.
What does frequently mean?
Like once every 3 weeks, probably.
Okay.
That's not so frequent, but okay.
The dust gets down behind the protective screen and it gets nasty.
Yeah. Well, no. So frequently to us in this room, that may not seem like very frequently. Now, after you hear some of these numbers, that's a lot.
Okay.
A lot, okay? Let me find some more of these numbers to throw out at you here. Okay, so broken down by gender, more than 1 in 4 men have never cleaned their phone. 1 in 5 women say that they've never cleaned their phone. All right, here's where it gets interesting. When both hands are busy, 2 in 5 Americans, 41%, say they don't hesitate to put their phones in their mouth.
Ugh.
Anybody ever done that?
I tuck it like under my chin sometimes if my hands are tied.
Never bite down on it.
No, that's disgusting.
Under my armpit.
Yeah.
I've done that before. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I do that all the time.
Yeah.
That's where I put my other kid.
Over half of the survey's respondents, 51%, admit to putting their keys in their mouth. 54% have put a credit card in their mouth.
Guilty.
34%. You put a credit card in your mouth?
Yeah, guilty.
34% have even put cash in their mouth.
I used to do that until somebody reamed me for it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Cash? I mean, yeah, cash. But please don't go down the road of putting loose change in your mouth.
No,
that's
probably
a bad idea. All right, but here's the one. I remember working here back in the day. I won't say who it was, but this is like 15 years ago. There was a guy, a buddy of mine, who was mortified because we have several bathrooms here, but the two closest ones to us are single units. So you go in and shut the door, it's just you.
Uh-huh.
Then there's one down the hall that is a communal bathroom. There's several stalls, right? So he came out, we had a staff meeting, and he came out of the bathroom the same time as this other guy, and he was mortified the whole meeting. He didn't pay attention to anything that happened in that meeting because he watched this guy use the restroom and not wash his hands. So forever and ever, that guy had the stigma of not washing his hands. But wait, all right? So fast forward to 2019, 88% of Americans usually bring their phones with them into the bathroom.
Guilty.
Yeah, I think. Okay, but it's one thing bringing it in if it stays in your pocket. Do you get it out and use it while?
Absolutely. That's my only free time, of course.
So do you clean your phone after you leave the restroom?
Not every time. But I do. Like, I wipe it down with, like, alcohol. Like, my bathroom at home is incredibly clean. I Clorox it all the time. I use all kinds of stuff. But, like, public restroom, I'm guilty of that, and I shouldn't.
46% say they always take their devices with them into a public restroom. 93% of people tend to take their phones in the bathroom. Parents, 93%. More than non-parents, 83%. I don't really know what that means. And then here's one more. Here's a couple more. 48% of Americans regularly eat lunch at their desk. Only 1 in 3 clean their desk once a week.
Oh, I thought somebody cleaned my desk for me when I was gone.
Yeah, I see how you're getting out of these. Yeah, the statistics must stop. That last one about how many people actually... And really, this is what it comes down to. It's one thing to take your phone in the bathroom. It's another thing to use your phone while you're doing what you're multitasking.
Your business, right, yeah.
Yeah, and I would venture to say that 95% of people listening right now don't clean their phone when they leave the restroom. So
I'm going to have to burn mine and go get a new one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
New phone after every visit to the restroom.
Or just an alcohol swab will be fine.
All right.
The best of the week on demand. This is Bo Thompson's WBT podcast.
But waiting in the wings first, we have our election night tandem of Tricia Cotham and Kenny Smith. Get their thoughts on last night's fifth Democratic debate in Atlanta. Before I bring them on, I want to play one clip here. You knew that Pete Buttigieg was going to be the target of many on the stage last night, and sure enough.
I know that it's par for the course in Washington to take remarks out of context, but that is outlandish, even by the standards of today's politics.
Are you saying that you didn't say that?
I was talking about U.S.-Mexico cooperation. We've been doing security cooperation with Mexico for years, with law enforcement cooperation. And a military relationship that could continue to be developed with training relationships, for example. Do you seriously think anybody on this stage is proposing invading Mexico?
I'm talking about building up alliances.
And if your question is about experience, let's also talk about judgment. One of the foreign leaders you mentioned meeting was Bashar al-Assad. I have, in my experience, such as it is, whether you think it counts or not, since it wasn't accumulated in Washington, enough judgment that I would not have sat down with a murderous dictator like that.
Congresswoman Gabbard, let me let you...
Okay, so Tulsi Gabbard...
...whether you would send our troops to Mexico to fight cartels, and your answer was yes. The fact checkers can check this out. No. But your point about judgment is absolutely correct. Our commander-in-chief does need to have good judgment. And what you've just pointed out is that you would lack the courage to meet with both adversaries and friends to ensure the peace and national security of our nation. I take the example of those leaders who have come before us, leaders like JFK, who met with Khrushchev, like Roosevelt, who met with Stalin,
like Reagan, who met
and worked with Gorbachev.
Tulsi Gabbard and right there, Pete Buttigieg, obviously sparring last night. You had Tulsi Gabbard sparring with a lot of people. That's one of the underlying themes or takeaways, I know, from me. Let's bring on Kenny Smith. He's with us now. Kenny, good morning.
Morning, Bud.
Tricia Cotham with us as well. Tricia, how are you?
I'm doing great.
So, Tricia, you watched this last night. Tulsi Gabbard got more FaceTime than I think she has at any other debate. And there was more of a focus, like I said, on Pete Buttigieg because of where he falls in the polling numbers right now.
Yeah, Tulsi certainly had some sparring incidents with Pete Buttigieg and Senator Kamala Harris. I mean, she certainly went on that debate stage, I think, looking to go after them and take some jabs. I think what she didn't expect is for Kamala Harris and Pete Buttigieg to jab so strongly back at Tulsi Gabbard that it made it look like Tulsi's actions were weak compared to their responses back.
Kenny, do you concur there?
I think that's a great point, but I must – one thing I'll admit is that I don't think there'll be anybody left in Mexico to invade if their open borders policy they continue to support happens. But I thought it was an interesting debate. Tulsi got more FaceTime. I was following the face, the tracking the times on Twitter. The first 30 minutes felt like an Elizabeth Warren press conference. Tom Steyer, you know, had minimal time. You got Andrew Yang finally gets in at about the 9:29 mark. They have too many people on stage. Most of these candidates don't have a real chance to win president. But I'll tell you, I do think something's interesting. I think you got Cory Booker and Senator Klobuchar. I think they're angling for a possible either VP or position within an administration. And I do think that those two probably still have a lot to gain from getting additional face time in the debate.
Tricia, Joe Biden last night, several gaffes. I played a clip about a half hour ago where he was talking about domestic violence and using the word punch several times, which and that's another interesting thing about last night is I don't remember a debate that had this much, interaction from the crowd as last night's. I mean, this was MSNBC. This is basically, the home turf of all home turfs for these candidates. But it was an interesting dynamic last night, I thought.
Well, and that moment certainly was cringeworthy when he was talking about domestic violence and then, really made a mistake using the word punch several times. But, you know, Joe Biden's been having gaffes for over 30 years, and clearly the voters, it doesn't really bother them. And when we look at polls, certainly, you know, he's not polling as well as he would like to be in Iowa. It's not a huge surprise. But when it really starts to matter in South Carolina, no one can catch up to him. So I think that shows that these gaffes do not really matter and that these debates do not really matter, because we've seen good performances at times by Kamala Harris, Cory Booker. They've not caught up.
Well, let me hang on a point you just made, because I want to end it by asking this question. Kenny, you said you thought there were too many people on stage.
Yep.
Tricia, you're saying that these debates last night in the grand scheme of things don't matter much. Couldn't you make the argument that possibly, just possibly, the ultimate candidate wasn't even on the stage last night? If you bring in Deval Patrick, if you bring in Michael Bloomberg, or even bring in, yes, Hillary Clinton's name still out there.
I think the only way one of those candidates makes it, and maybe Hillary is, would be through some sort of contested slash brokered convention. I think it's going to be hard at this point probably to get on every ballot that you would need.
Yep.
But I want two things, and then I'll let Trish have the last word. One is, I think these are more than Biden's gaffes. He is not the Joe Biden that debated Paul Ryan, and that's more and more evident every debate. And then again, I say this every time, I still say the big winner is Trump, is a Republican, watching them debate the nuances of which is a better way to raise your taxes is not going to win middle-class voters. So I still think these folks all have a long way to go to make up headway in that regard.
All right, 30 seconds, Tricia. You have the last word on this.
Certainly have no concern about Deval Patrick ending the race or Michael Bloomberg at all. I think the person to always keep your eye on is Hillary Clinton. I think she's always inching to get in. Joe Biden had a strong night. He just did. He has a tremendous legacy and is getting a lot of votes. And, you know, in a primary, you really do have to win a tremendous amount of African-American votes. And he is running away with those votes, even when you have African-American candidates on stage. So I think that really tells you something. Elizabeth Warren, once again, remained a constant, steady, consistent, on-message candidate. She was unrattled. You might dislike her policies and find them extremely out there. However, in terms of doing her job as a candidate and looking presidential, she certainly does that and has done that every time.
Tricia Cotham and Kenny Smith, I got to stop it there. Both of you, I appreciate it. Longtime election analyst, and we'll keep watching as this thing keeps percolating along.
Wherever you are, whenever you're ready. Bo Thompson. This is Bo Thompson's WBT podcast.
Elsa, the past is not what it seems. Go to the enchanted lands and into the unknown.
Promise me we do this together, okay?
Quick question. Is the whole putting us in mortal danger going to be a regular thing?
That's my sister!
Never a dull moment with you two.
Frozen 2, rated PG.
Hello, neighbor.
Mr. Rogers.
I'm here to interview you.
It is so nice to meet you.
I'm profiling Mr. Rogers.
Boyd, please don't ruin my childhood.
It is WBT's Friday Morning News. I'm Bo Thompson, and on the WBT hotline, Sean O'Connell. But the real question is, where is Sean O'Connell today? I think this is quite the long-distance call.
Cabo San Lucas, Mexico. And we are here for the Jumanji, the Next Level press event. Not that the film was shot here. I believe they shot it some in Atlanta. I know that much. But then they jumped around to a bunch of different locations around the world. But when The Rock and Kevin Hart want to do their junket in Cabo San Lucas, the rest of us come down here to interview them. So yeah. That's why we're here.
Yeah, I think so. And this movie is due next month, right? Near Christmas time. And the first movie, while loosely based on the original Robin Williams movie, was pretty much a movie unto itself. And it did gangbusters business.
It really did. And I think that's why, you know, they're all back together for a sequel, because that first movie, if you remember, it went up against Star Wars, The Last Jedi, and people kind of thought it was going to get buried, but it overperformed because people really loved the new concept. It's more of a an updated video game, a console game almost, and these guys jumped into avatars, teenagers jumped into avatars, played by, you know, The Rock, Kevin Hart, Karen Gillan, and Jack Black, and this time out, they're introducing Danny DeVito and Danny Glover to the mix and then taking it to all new locations. So it's one of those sequels that just keeps building on the concept of the original and also delivering a lot of what you loved about the first movie.
So this is the last time you and I will talk before Thanksgiving, and we have one of the biggest movie weekends of the year upon us today and two huge movies. And I'll start with a sequel that I thought would have come a lot sooner than this one has, given the success of the original Frozen. But here we are. Frozen 2 is finally here today.
It is, and I think it took a long time because of the songwriting process, but also cracking the story. I know that Disney really was adamant about not just delivering another Frozen movie, you know, simply because the first one was so successful. That those characters are beloved now at this point, and the music, of course, has to be up to the standards of the original film. So it took them 6 years to crack it, and what I'll say is, if you loved the first Frozen, you're going to get a lot more of what you got the first time through. It's, you know, it's the two sisters and the bond that they share, exploring more of their story, comedic relief by Olaf. It's memorable songs that your kid's probably going to be dialing into. But at the same time, if you saw Frozen and didn't quite understand, you know, what the big hoopla was, I'm not sure that this movie's going to convince you one way or the other. That it's a property that people get behind. It's really successful, but it's very different, you know, from what Disney does. And I find it interesting in that Disney Animation up to this point doesn't really do a lot of sequels. And now all of a sudden, with this, with Wreck-It Ralph 2, I know they're planning on doing another Zootopia. They're really opening up the door to the terms of what movies they make sequels for. And it's just really curious to see how they're doing this and what properties they choose to go forward on. But, yeah, I expect Frozen to do really well. I'm just not quite sure that, you know, if you didn't love the first one, you're gonna really get a lot out of this second one.
Well, we have it up against a movie that is about something kid-based, but I think it's important not to make the mistake of saying this is a kid's movie. It's rated PG, and younger people can see this, but adults, older people, are going to get the most out of this.
It's a beautiful day in this neighborhood, a beautiful day for a neighbor. Would you be mine? Could you be mine? It's a neighborly day in this beauty wood, a neighborly day for a beauty. Would you be mine? Could you be mine?
A beautiful day in the neighborhood and the long-awaited Tom Hanks portrayal of Fred Rogers.
I've always wanted to live in a neighborhood with you.
And you're basically going to see just how good Tom Hanks is as Fred Rogers. But I want to let people know, this movie is being advertised as, you know, a Mr. Rogers film, and it's not necessarily that. And that's going to sound really strange if you've seen the trailers, because that's all that they are leaning into. But the story of A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood is more about this journalist who's played by Matthew Reese, who, you know, based on a true story, back in the day was given a profile assignment that he was supposed to write up a story about Fred Rogers. And this guy considered himself to be more of a hard-hitting journalist. He wanted to be out in the field reporting on war and politics, and just thought that the Fred Rogers profile was beneath him. And it's about how, you know, interacting with Fred Rogers changed his life. But you get a lot of focus on the journalist and problems that he's having with his father, played by Chris Cooper. And Tom Hanks is truly in a supporting role. So it's not as major of a Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers neighborhood movie as people might expect. There was a documentary that came out most recently called Won't You Be My Neighbor? Confusing with the titles, I know. That documentary is way more about Fred Rogers, but this is just a chance to get to see Tom Hanks playing an American icon, but an American icon who helped a journalist along at a particular point in his life. And I think people might be confused if they're going into it thinking they're going to get the Fred Rogers story.
Well, and you mentioned the documentary. That features old footage of Fred Rogers. I think the real bottom line question to this, no matter who you are, is do you buy Tom Hanks as Fred Rogers? What's the answer to that?
Me, personally, it's not that I didn't buy him, but I never stopped seeing Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
It's not like he completely, like when Christian Bale played Dick Cheney, I didn't see Christian Bale at all. When I see Tom Hanks playing Fred Rogers, I see Tom Hanks doing a very good Fred Rogers impersonation, but it's never not Tom Hanks to me.
Well, and Tom Hanks is a national treasure. We all know that. But it is a unique situation where you have a guy who's played so many different characters that flow through your head. He's playing a guy who there's only one, Mr. Rogers. So competing forces, I imagine it is a bit of a tough thing to untangle in your mind.
Yes, for sure. And the question will become, too, will Tom Hanks compete in the Oscars? Because he's going to have to go in the supporting actor category. And this year, as we get closer to the awards and we talk about it, that supporting actor category is going to be stacked with amazing talent. And while Tom Hanks is definitely an Academy favorite, and here he is playing an icon, I could see him being on the outside looking in when all this is said and done.
All right, so final thing, two episodes in, and the third one drops today of Disney's The Mandalorian. What are you thinking so far?
I'm loving it. Clearly, now that we're able to talk about Baby Yoda, that has become a milestone in the pop culture realm. It's one of the most adorable characters I've ever seen. Pairing the hardened bounty hunter of the Mandalorian with this Baby Yoda character that he has to protect, I think is a great way to stretch out for the first couple of, you know, eight episodes of this first season. And, it really does feel like a throwback to the Return of the Jedi era Star Wars, and I'm kind of disappointed that we're a little bit disappointed that we're seeing this as a TV show and not as a movie when we had to see, you know, Solo, which to me was very disappointing. And I wish that they sort of put their efforts into a Mandalorian film. But listen, it's on Disney Plus. You can I've gone back and rewatched the first two episodes a couple of times. I'm really enjoying it, and I can't wait to see where the rest of the story goes.
All right, so let me throw my theory at you. And I haven't really decided whether I really believe this or not, but if it comes true, then remember where you heard this. But so
okay.
So this takes place after Return of the Jedi, right? The Mandalorian?
Yes, it does. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So what if this Rise of Skywalker movie coming out in a few weeks, what if the Mandalorian showed up in that movie? Could that ever happen?
Yes, I suppose.
Because, think about this. So if you've been watching The Mandalorian, that's a huge big payoff of a character that you've really come to love. If you haven't been watching The Mandalorian, and I guess this is the capitalist money-grabbing guy part of me imagining this, but if you haven't been watching it and Disney's trying to get more and more subscribers, then if you watch that movie in a few weeks and The Mandalorian shows up, what do you have to do immediately upon leaving the theater? You got to go home and sign up for Disney Plus and figure out who this guy is.
Boy, Bo, that is so cold-hearted and cynical. You're only thinking from a business perspective. I love it.
So, yeah, to be continued. Maybe we'll come back around this conversation in January. So we'll leave it there for now. Sean O'Connell, I've never been able to say this, but live from Cabo this morning. It must be nice. Thanks for checking in. I know you're busy. I appreciate it.
No problem, brother. Talk to you soon.
And you'll have things you'll want to talk about. I will too. See you next time.
Bo Thompson is Best of the Week on WBT. Plus, extended interviews and exclusive digital content. This is Bo Thompson's WBT Podcast.
Time to bring on Dr. Robert Thompson from the Bleier Center for Television and Pop Culture Studies at Syracuse. Dr. Thompson, hope you're well.
I hope you are, too.
Have you been watching these impeachment public hearings so far?
I have. Of course, they're not on every day, but and they're long. They're usually, what, 5 hours of stuff, 6 hours chronologically. But it's interesting. The numbers are now in for the first 2 days.
Right.
About 12.7 million on the second day, down from 13-something on the 13.8, I think, on the first day, which is a lot of people, no question about that. But we should compare it to when James Comey, the former FBI director, did his testimony back in, 2017. That got 19.5, almost 20 million people. Michael Cohen got 15.8. Both of which are way higher than either of these days have. These are about the same as the Robert Mueller hearing. So a lot of people watching this, but by no means the blockbuster that everybody was saying it would be.
Well, because you don't really have a star here. You don't have someone, and you really don't today. And you don't. The only person this week that's remotely someone that you might have recognized on the street is Gordon Sondland. But then again, you still got to be paying attention to what's going on here to know that name. I would venture to say that when you have all these eyes and ears on these hearings, it's more about what the questioners are going to do than it is what the actual testifying people are.
It is, and it is kind of disturbing, as all of the late-night comics and Saturday Night Live and lots of others have pointed out, this idea that there was all this anticipation of what kind of television show this was going to be, and that the Democrats were going to have to make it a great television show if they were going to achieve what they wanted. The idea now that televised hearings are much more about showbiz than the information they get. And I think that's exacerbated by the fact that, unlike Watergate, where we kept getting this kind of drip, drip, drip of new revelations and stories, the famous cancer on the presidency statement from John Dean and the Butterfield bit where we found out there were tapes and all of that kind of stuff. Here, I think there's a sense that so many of the big, shocking details of this are things that we already know and that somehow seem to have, not become as shocking as everybody thought they should be. And therefore, as one watches, there's no sense of, I think a lot of people think there isn't going to be any groundbreaking information because we've got so much of it already.
Well, tomorrow should be an interesting day, top to bottom, because you have, first of all, you have another round of hearings on Capitol Hill. And then tomorrow night, MSNBC will have the latest Democratic debate, and notable about this one is it's going to be all female-led as far as the moderators go, and you have obviously a field that's starting to whittle down a little bit, but there's also the dynamic now of you're hearing about a lot of people that may get in this race later, like a Deval Patrick or a Michael
right.
Bloomberg or even a Hillary Clinton, you're starting to get the idea that maybe the ones we're watching tomorrow night might not necessarily be the ones that in the end are on the ticket.
Yeah, you're right. They're the ones that are going to be on the in the debate are whittling down, but the others seem to be doing just the opposite. And there is a sense that this is by no means it is still a fluid kind of situation. And so many of these debates, I mean, you know, back in the early television debate thing, which didn't happen till 1960, there were four Kennedy-Nixon debates, but by that time they were the candidates for the presidency, and it was really close. I think the first of the two Kennedy-Nixon debates, if I'm not mistaken, the first one was September 26th, so getting very, very close to the election before right. they finally got around to debating. And then we didn't have presidential debates for quite a long time after that first one. And now, you know, we're not even into 2020 yet, and I've lost count of how many of these primary debates we've had.
Yeah. Rachel Maddow, Andrea Mitchell, Kristen Welker from NBC, and then Ashley Parker will be doing the questioning tomorrow night. So I want to shift gears away from politics to Disney Plus. It was a week ago today that the streaming service was launched by Disney. I assume you've had a chance to see some of these offerings, maybe The Mandalorian so far, the big Star Wars series. But the bigger story, or one of the biggest stories, unfortunately for Disney, has been the glitches, the issues people have had with the selection, that once you get there, it's not all that maybe they thought would be in the catalog, and then disclaimers have become a big story too.
Yeah, I was one of the people that experienced those glitches. It was supposed to launch, what, officially at 6 a.m. On the 12th. I kept trying to get on it. It was pleased to take my credit card number. There was no problem with that. But I wasn't able to get programming until well past noon on that first on that first day. And there are some interesting. I've seen all the new stuff. I don't think The Mandalorian was anything that knocked my socks off. I kind of like that new Jeff Goldblum documentary series that he did. But you're right, when they go back to the program, the old programming in the catalog, there's a number of shows, and we all know this from old animated stuff, that have some things that are, you know, really racist. And they included this very brief disclaimer: this program is presented as originally created. It may contain outdated cultural depictions. I think it's perfectly fine to put a disclaimer. Matter of fact, I think it's called for to put some kind of statement before really old catalog stuff to point out, in fact, that it's going to have this kind of material that many people may find offensive. That disclaimer, though, doesn't really say much. It may contain outdated material. It doesn't claim its own ownership. This stuff was actually done by Disney. Compared to when Tom and Jerry cartoons were released, had a much more extensive contextualization.
You bring up a good point. I've heard all these stories about glitches and issues with Disney Plus, but not a single one about glitches and issues with it taking your credit card number.
Right. Oh, yeah, exactly.
Dr. Yeah, Thompson.
That they managed to to do effortlessly.
Works like a charm. Imagine
right,
that.
Exactly.
Have a great day, sir. I appreciate you coming on.
You too. Thanks.
You're listening to Bo Thompson's WPT Podcast.
You know, just when I thought I'd gotten this out of my system.
Never.
Not that I ever wanted it in my system, but when this movie was released several years ago, you could not avoid this song. Even if you didn't have kids.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Big fish.
Nicole never bothered me anyway.
Yeah, well, guess what, John Moore? Guess what, Pam? There's a new one out today.
My adventures and don't need something new.
This is the one you're going to be hearing if you have kids. Get ready.
Into the unknown. Into the unknown.
So Frozen 2 is out today. We talked to Sean O'Connell earlier, and this is one of those songs that's going to be omnipresent. And even so, if that one doesn't work for you, then they have a radio-friendly one for the older kids done by, you ever heard of Panic at the Disco?
Yes.
Yeah, well, here's Panic at the Disco doing the same song. Actually, let me pull up the wrong one. Here we go. Into the unknown. Okay.
Yeah.
I just like to warn parents when these things are coming. And
they're coming.
You cannot stop Frozen 2. You can only hope to contain it. It's out today in theaters, and I have no doubt it's going to do major business over the Thanksgiving weekend. But, hey, you know, got to let everybody know about everything, right?
Yeah, why not?
I got to let everybody know about this, too, because this struck my attention yesterday. John Moore is jacked up on something today.
Yes, I've noticed.
It's not one cup of coffee, maybe eight cups of coffee. Did you actually go to the vending machine and buy the Monster energy drink? Is that what it was?
No, I avoided that this morning.
You're right about the coffee. Coffee intravenously.
Yeah. It was right. Quick.
So if John Moore lived on the West Coast, which he does not.
No.
He never could. He couldn't survive that atmosphere. But if he did live on the West Coast, he might know something about a new fad called dopamine fasting. Have you heard of this?
Recently.
Could be, or sounds like Silicon Valley's latest wellness trend. During a so-called dopamine fast, extreme practitioners will abstain from any experience that brings them pleasure. That could include, but doesn't mean it's not limited to, food, exercise, social media, sex, video games, talking, anything that, you know, gives you some sort of positive stimulant. So they have decided, this community of people, that if you deprive yourself of all of these things, that when you come back to, it all floods back and it's that much better when you haven't had it for a while, right? So some people go as far as to avoid making eye contact or talking with people or even doing things, you know, moderately fast movements, whatever that means. It's all an effort to avoid any kind of stimulation. So fasters believe that they are resetting their brain's reward system.
That's insane. I couldn't come to work.
But basically it means you got to go live in a you have to go cut yourself off from society for however long you think it's going to take you to build up that.
And that's my question. Like, how long does that take someone? Or can someone just be like, "Oh, I'm going to do this for 24 hours and then think that it has that big of an effect on them?
Taking a break from sins and small pleasures, they try to reset the brain's reward system. Let's see. After a fast, they report feeling more focused and finding more joy in the activities they'd avoided. Now, there are plenty of people who say there's no science to this. This is just a fad. But I don't know. That is a good question. How long do you need to dopamine fast in order to get the rush back?
Right.
Because, you know, I mean, you could deprive yourself for an hour or two, and maybe you get like a... I don't know.
Right, because everybody's different.
But... Again, I feel like we're working in a room today with a guy who's done it.
I will tell you this. I haven't had a soda in a couple of days. This is day three of the anti-soda. I'm not against sodas because I want to sample some a little later, possibly. But taking a little break.
I was about to say, this is a kind of a bad time to tell you that later on in the show, the people from Coke have sent us the new holiday-themed beverages. Did you know about it?
Am I invited for this tasting?
Well, I'm telling you about it. I hope you come back.
Wait, this will be like saving up for my dopamine. I've avoided it for a couple of days.
But wait a minute. Why are you fasting from sodas?
We're just taking a little break. You know, a few years ago when I got off of them for a while, I lost about 40 pounds, so... Seeing if I can replicate
so
that.
So easy for
but
you
you're
guys.
But wired. It seems like you've like tripled it, not quit doing
well,
it.
Well, I increased my coffee level to offset soda.
All right, so coffee instead of soda. Because I've told all of you who listen to the show, I don't drink coffee. I mean, it may seem like the strangest thing ever.
Really?
I never told you that?
No.
I don't drink coffee. I hate coffee.
I don't drink soda.
Really?
Yeah, I fasted from soda back in high school and haven't gone back
since
to it.
Since high school?
High school.
Why? What was the reason?
It was just one of those. It was just like that extra sugary and caffeine. And I liked it. I liked it so much. I was constantly drinking it. Like, that's basically the only thing that was in my house. And now, like, my son doesn't even drink it. It's water, juice, and milk that's in my fridge, and that's it.
So you ditched the soda.
I did soda in high school.
But it's all dopamine now, right?
So wait. You just wait till I get a sip today. You think John Moore's bad.
So John Moore's fasting from soda until later on. We have the Coca-Cola people, because they know I talk about Coke so much. They sent me the new, it's the cinnamon Coke.
Ooh.
And also cranberry spiced, holiday cranberry spiced Sprite.
Oh, okay. Well, when you said Sprite, then I have a different, like, oh, because at first I was like, ugh. But you said Sprite, and I was like, oh, okay.
No, so that. I've got, they sent me samples, and so we can try some of that later on. Because, I mean, look at me. I'm drinking the sample, not the same one, but I'm drinking the Orange Vanilla Coke Zero, which when they first put this out earlier in the summer, they sent me some. And so look at me now. So that'll be later in the show. Dopamine fasting, John Moore's soda fasting. If you're thinking about here's the thing about dopamine fasting. It's free.
Right. I don't usually use when I get home, I'm not on my phone that much. Like when I'm here, I'm looking up things or I'm doing stuff, but I could do that. I could get away with doing that maybe for like 2-3 days.
Well, and like they said, one of the things that you should deprive yourself of in order to replicate this is social media, your phone.
Just got to let it go. Let it go.
Oh, gosh.
Don't let start. It go.
It's your fault. It's your fault, John. I had no intention of playing this again. And I will never play it again from here on out. Because we have a new one today.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, right.
Love this song.
You love it because you stopped drinking soda. Yeah. They should just rename this song Dopamine. Right. All right.
Thanks for listening to Bo Thompson's WBT podcast. Hear Bo live weekday mornings 5 to 8 on WBT's Morning News and 8 to 10 on The Pat McRory Show with Bo Thompson. Plus, on demand anytime at WBT.com and radio.com.
Monday, it's a new episode of All Rise, the legal drama where one judge is shaking up the system.
When I take the bench, I'm taking a vow to fight for justice.
One case at a time.
Your Honor,
we're going to trial.
Simone Missick is Judge Lola Carmichael.
Up on that bench, everything is different.
A new episode of All Rise.
Freedom is at stake. It's important.
Followed by a new episode of Bull, Monday at 9, 8 central on CBS.